Good afternoon. Today is Thursday, October the 3rd, 273rd day of the new year. Joining us this afternoon, Humboldt County Sheriff and botanist, Mike Downey.
Well, now watch that.
Horticulturist?
Okay.
Yeah, all right. Aquaculturist?
Yeah.
Zoologist?
Zoologist.
Ornithologist?
Well, no, okay.
How
many ornithologists are you going to give me here?
Well, that's about it. That's what? Plants, birds, right. Water, and dead critters.
Yeah, here you go.
That's about... Oh, and police science guy.
There you go.
Oh, Mr. Downey is alongside this afternoon. We've got a bunch of different things to talk about. New vehicle. Okay, that's a interesting thing. We've also got plantations.
Mm-hmm.
Many of them, I'm sure that these are just the tip of the iceberg of those that Mike has talked about over the last year or so with the flyovers of what's out there and the magnitude of what's there. So we'll talk about that. And also, we'll see if we can start a little battle going on between EPD and Humboldt County Sheriffs.
Why not?
We'll see. So we'll start the ping pong game.
There you go.
How's that? Back and forth when we come back.
At my bank, I feel at home. I'm Trish Greggy of The Journey's End, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, hometown banking isn't just something they say, it's how they do business. I'm Kevin McClendon of Georgia's Glass, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, we invest in the future of our community every single day. I'm Greg Foster, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
Redwood Capital Bank, our interest is you. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:13. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Mike Downey. But before we do, our quote this afternoon, selected by same such individual. That'd be you.
Thank you.
Yeah. You go now by the name of same such.
Applause on now.
Oh, I'm just feeling the sound wave just permeating the entire structure. Quote, in many ways, the saying, know thyself is lacking. Better to know other people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Do you want to start with the 20-year-old crossbow shooter?
Hey, it's your show.
Yeah, my show, your response. Is that the weirdest thing in the world?
It is. It was quite a shock to see something like that occur. I've seen a lot of things in my career, and not saying that tops it, but that was very unexpected.
Yeah, well, and the thing that I thought was fortunate, if there's a fortunate in it, is that it didn't evolve, escalate, relocate to where the Chinese government officials were about an hour later in that general vicinity.
Right.
That really could have made life, well, dynamic,
right,
if nothing else.
Right.
Do we see a lot of that, Mike? I mean, I'm surprised we're not hearing anything like 16-year-old runaway.
Mm-hmm.
Kidnapping, statutory this or that. Was that just not a factor in this? Is this another just somebody at 16 deciding to run away with some guy?
Well, you know, it just came to the forefront. It was a very emotional, high profile type of case that brought all that to the forefront. You know, I think we have things like that going on at times that it's just not publicized. You know, there's a lot of publicity about it. But, you know, we have runaways out there. We have, people of different types of walks of life running around. I mean, it's not such an uncommon thing. But I think the events that brought it to the forefront were so uncommon that it became very publicly oriented, so to speak.
Well, we get an awful lot of discussion and comment and sensitivity about Amber Alerts.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What is the distinction between an Amber Alert and scenario like that? Is it just the age of the individual being 16? But age, we've had ambers of 17 and 18 year old abductions.
Yeah, age, immediacy. You know, how fresh was the incident? I mean, if we can show that so and so left point A, and we know they're headed to point B, the Amber Alert will go out. If it's something that's really fresh that has just happened, and there's it's a dangerous situation, and we have to extra vigilant for these individuals. You know, those kind of things trigger it. So it just depends on the circumstances.
I love the quote that Dick Johnson had yesterday in his comment. That Brandon, or one of the grandkids, had worked with the guy for a little bit. Well, he seemed normal. Ooh.
Yeah.
But a lot of these guys seem normal, don't they? Before they do something goofy?
Yeah, they do. It just depends on what that trigger point is that causes this incident to occur. A lot of their character is suppressed. Could be drug-related. Could be a number of things. And at times that even enhances that type of behavior. So it just depends on they can lead very normal lives and be out in the public and seem just like your next door neighbor, but things can change. I don't know your next door neighbor, but you know, just throwing that out there.
Yeah, you do. Do you have any? Let me lead with me first, and then you can say yes or no. I'm taking offense at the phrase substance abuse.
Okay.
Because we'll hear a situation where, like a drug arrest, mm-hmm. and somebody took on somebody else, and it was substance abuse. I cannot recall in my short life, I guess I can't hardly use that either for too much longer.
What the heck?
My short life of a drunk going across the fence, breaking into his neighbor's house, going for the liquor cabinet. I just don't seem to recall that as a news story, and yet it's not uncommon each night to hear so-and-so broke in trying to steal drugs from so-and-so, the neighbor. I know there's been a big push politically to put everybody together and say marijuana isn't and meth isn't and booze isn't. They're all the same. And I'm looking at it going, wait a minute, you know, I'm not seeing kegs being stolen and thrown through windows and things of that nature.
Right.
We are seeing drug on drug, marijuana growers on marijuana growers,
right.
Meth, heroin, all that kind of stuff. Am I being hypersensitive, or is maybe just observant?
I think you're being observant. I think we're seeing an escalation in all kinds of crime, whether it be large swings or small, there's still an escalation. We were just talking about this the other day. Many of our major crimes in the county, I'm talking homicides, rapes, car thefts, those types of things.
Felony kind of stuff?
Yeah, the high felony types of things seem to have decreased or leveled off, where our more petty crimes have shot up. So there's a correlation between that as the type of people that are out there and what they're looking for.
KINS News and Information Times, 3:19.
Now a minute of sunshine for Humboldt. The North Coast Repertory Theater is now celebrating its 30th season with 6 treats for Humboldt audiences. First is the George S. Kaufman Moss Hart Pulitzer Prize-winning comedy, You Can't Take It With You. Then the musical, You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown, based on the Peanuts comic strip. After the holidays, there'll be a double feature straight from ancient Greece, the murderous tragedy Oedipus the King and the comedy Women in Congress. Next is the side-splitting Complete Works of William Shakespeare, a parody in which all 17 of the Bard's plays are played in 97 minutes. Late spring features the North Coast premiere of the popular Les Miserables. The season ends with The Poor of New York, a melodrama from 1857 of the problems of a middle-class family not all that different from today's. For dates, times, and details, call 442-6278. Sunshine for Humboldt is a nonprofit civic organization dedicated to the people and events that make this a good place to live.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 3:24. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Mike Downey. Mike, if we kind of move away from the crossbow and those related things to something a little bit more pedestrian, Mm-hmm. Like your plantation busts.
Yeah.
Holy Toledo.
Right.
Were you on the big one, or did you just hear about it?
No, I wasn't there. I was out a couple of weeks ago, and they did a fairly fairly elaborate and large grow operation with all the environmental aspects present at the time. This one, last week was pretty substantial. That's what we're finding, you know, especially as you get towards the end of the season when the plants become more and more valuable, so to speak. You can see the numbers and the value bump up based upon the product and what's there, and also what we might seize as far as historical data.
Staggering is a phrase that I had when I heard 21,000 plants. That doesn't, I don't have a clue. You know, I don't know. But 21 million. Yeah. Not that I have any closer reference to 21 right. million than 21,000.
Yeah.
But that to me sounds like it must have been one of those size operations that you've alluded to in the flyovers,
mm-hmm.
where you're talking about your opportunity to share some of the stuff with Dan Rather last month
right.
and some of the drive flyovers. What is a footprint of something like that? Is that the top of a mountain or what?
Well, it depends on how it's being grown. I was just checking earlier this week. Had my marijuana guys get me an estimate of what we've pulled so far this year in Humboldt County, and we're at about 105,000 plants for the county, which is pretty normal. We've had lower years. We've had some substantially higher years.
So it's
too.
Over $100 million. Retail-ish?
You know, those figures are hard to really pin down. But, yeah, you could put it out there. I mean, Jennifer Budwig from Redwood Capital a few years did a study, and she estimated somewhere $1 billion industry here in the county. So I would say you're looking at...
So that would be about a tenth of it. Is that enough to impact? Or is that still such a small percentage that it just kind of keeps chugging on its own?
The million-dollar question there.
Yeah, well, $500 million
yeah,
question,
because,
huh?
Because there's so it's such a fleeting number. You know, a lot of it's built on estimates. A lot of it's built on what we're seeing in the field from the air, the number of grow sites, estimate of how many plants are there. We were just looking at it today, looking at the county that we have pinpointed certain number of grows from the last couple of years. I think we're over 4,000 that we have identified from not last year but the year before that were in the ground that we could identify. And we were looking today to see what we actually, our impact to that map from 2 years ago. And you can see that we've hit everywhere all over the county, but we only hit about 70 to 80 grow sites.
Wow.
So it's pretty staggering, and it is overwhelming to think of what is in the ground. Now we go into the interdiction phase of the season to see what we can interdict, see if what's moving, and that's a very elusive endeavor itself.
This large one, and we talked about the one earlier this week, the little one.
Yeah.
Yeah, in comparative. Was this one of the drug cartels?
I'm not so sure of that, but it was a large organized crime issue. And again, it had all the components that we're looking for, the environmental damage, the insecticides, rodenticides, all the things, the water diversions, all those issues were there. We did one earlier this week, just yesterday, where actually Indian artifact site was actually disrupted and a building put on top. So now you have... Fish and Game and other environmental agencies coming in and actually getting involved heavily in the enforcement of these issues. And the DA's office has a unit there. They're working on the environmental side of it also. So that's become the mode of operation for us. We're looking at the environmental impact.
So you're not going straight up against the right. the agriculture elements.
Right.
It's the other parts. The fact that it was... Now, I think the press release said prehistoric Indian.
Right.
So immediately I flashed to woolly mammoth. Okay. Now, when they were moving the bridge between Humboldt and Del Norte County on 299, it was an ancient
mm-hmm.
Indian site.
Right.
What does prehistoric mean?
I couldn't answer that. I really don't know. I haven't really looked into that as much as I would like to. But I would think it means just that. You know, it predates many of the historical norms that we know here, and we're going back quite a ways.
It's like over 1,000 years, kind of thing?
I would speculate. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
What did they find there? Was it bones and arrowheads?
I'm not even really sure of that. What I heard was probably.
Did you go to work yesterday?
Yeah. I do a lot more than marijuana. I understand.
These things are kind of cool because they're curiosities.
My understanding was not only a possible burial site, but probably artifacts also. That were associated with that site, other artifacts other than
so like living stuff, villages or the equivalent thereof.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. From what I know about it,
is there often a lot of historical degradation that occurs with these?
Sure,
I'm sure they just kind of go and plow everything away. But
yeah,
I've not heard that element before.
Yeah, sure. You know, we have there's an area out in Alder Point where there was. I'm not going to give the exact location, but there's a rock out there that is known for the flint and the obsidian arrowheads that could come off of there, and it's actually a protected site. You go out there, and there's signs all around it saying protected by the U.S. government archaeological site, but it's surrounded by this enclave of people who could care less about protection of anything.
KIS
all over.
It's 3:30.
Are you thinking about opening or expanding your business in McKinleyville? Come see what the McKinleyville Shopping Center has to offer. We're holding an open house for prospective tenants this Wednesday, October 2nd from 4 to 7 p.m. We have great lease rates and incentives. Benefit from the foot traffic generated by quality businesses like Safeway, Ramon's Bakery, Subway, and Napa Auto Parts. Call us at 268-1800 with any questions or visit McKinleyvilleShoppingCenter.com. Come join us this Wednesday from 4 to 7.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 3:35. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Humboldt County Sheriff Mike Downey. Mike, the concept of having a new police chief in the neighborhood has got to be kind of exciting. Not that the old guy was bad or anything else, but I would think as tight as the chiefs and the sheriff are, and as much interaction and cross-training and all that kind of stuff, whatever new cool ideas they bring to the table, everybody gets a chance to benefit from.
And I think you're going to see this happening in Eureka. I've had the opportunity to talk to the new chief probably for – I've been talking to him the last couple of months, actually, conversing with him. I'm very impressed not only by his presence and how he presents himself, but by his credentials. My wife and I just had lunch on Saturday with he and his wife, very personable couple. He's got a lot of fresh ideas. He's coming from a large city, well, you know, San Diego, but he was in charge of a division there that's about the size of Humboldt County population-wise. I heard this morning on the radio they had a clip from him from the meeting the other night where he said you could unplug Ocean Beach where he is stationed and plug that and unplug Eureka and swap them, and you wouldn't be able to tell the difference between the two. That's interesting. So he's probably aware of some of the issues and problems we're having here in the city of Eureka, and I think he's going to be a good fit. I'm pretty impressed with him.
Is there an opportunity? I know we've talked in the past about combining dispatch and some of the other functional divisions of many of the law enforcement agencies. Is this a window of opportunity to do that? Is that when you do it, or do you wait until everybody's really comfortable with one another and then try to put together things to make it?
Well, yeah, you know, anytime you have a new chief come in or a new executive come in, you wonder what kind of changes are going to come about. Now, I have talked to him conceptually about the consolidation of dispatch and OES, that type of thing. Again, he doesn't know enough, feet on the ground type of thing to really make a decision. I'm not looking for a decision from this time, just starting the conversation. You know, we already have some consolidation. You know, I can go to, I can look at our SWAT team. You know, my SWAT team has EPD officers attached to it. He likes that concept. We've talked about it. I don't see any major change coming there at all. But again, he's going to have to look at things again when he gets here and really get a good picture of what's going on. But the consolidation is a big issue and one that will take time. But I think it's one that many areas in California are heading toward.
Yeah, hazardous materials is also one of those joint efforts, isn't it?
Yeah,
the hazmat response team.
Right, okay. Right. Yeah, and we have our EOD team, our bomb squad, but those would work hand in hand with any kind of other hazardous material type thing.
We had a couple situations, I guess, Florida earlier this week before things went goofy today, with bombs being detonated, weird things being found. Do we have any of those around here that we don't hear about? I mean, I don't know if it. You would think that we would because of the ruralness and some of the goofballs that we seem to have.
People producing them?
Either producing, leaving.
Right.
Leaving a bag and nobody knows what it is and having to have the response. You know, just those types of things that would bring that team together in a response mode.
Yeah. You know, my team, my explosive ordnance team, they probably respond to those types of calls half a dozen times or better a year. Where a bag is found left, it's got wires coming out of it. There's something suspicious about it. You know, most of the time it's nothing, but still we have to treat that as if it was an explosive device. You know, one of the limitations that we have is my team is trained by the FBI. FBI has a certain set of criteria that we have to follow to keep that certification. So
protocols and procedures.
Yes, we don't believe in free peaks. We don't believe in free peaks would be there's something downrange. It may or may not be a bomb. We don't send a tech down there to take a quick peek and go, oh, no, that's not a bomb. I mean, they have to follow procedure and protocol, and it's in place for a reason so that accidents don't happen. And there are explosive devices here. We have found some in the field that need to be detonated in a wise manner, and we have the people that know how to do that. Have we exploded things that aren't explosive devices in the past? Sure we have. But we're following protocol to make sure that no one gets hurt.
How do you explode them? I mean, do you take it somewhere or cover it or just target practice?
If they can be moved, we have what we call the old crab cooker. It's a cylindrical device on a trailer with it's the thickness of probably three or four inches thick of metal and in a cylindrical type of a formation. And we can actually pick an item up, put it inside there, and transport it safely. If it explodes, it's contained to this trailer. If it's something we can transport out to the beach or somewhere that is away from people, we can deal with it. We can also deal with it on site. You know, 2-3 years ago, we had a magazine. It was a dynamite magazine in Hoopa that had been left for years. It was a vault, and it was open. Dynamite was oozing, and it was dangerous. And we actually had to destroy that on site and clear a quarter to a mile radius around this. It was pretty bad. What we were able to do was soak it in diesel, and then burn it off. We were actually able to safely burn it off. It didn't explode. But that comes from experience. It comes from the training that my people have to know how to do that. They have to calculate, well, how much diesel is it going to take to soak this thing so we can burn it off safely? Because to move it would be disastrous.
Because it becomes so unstable.
Right. And once dynamite starts to ooze like that, you know, that's something people should be aware of. We get calls like that all the time where someone finds old dynamite. If it's crystallized and it's starting to ooze, or you see that it's not intact, stay away from it. Don't touch it. Don't just call the sheriff's office, and we'll come deal with it because it's highly volatile.
Now the World War II era bomb that was down in Old Town,
right?
Was that a shell? Was that something off an old boat that was there? Scrap iron?
Well, we get calls like that all the time around here where there's old World War II era bomb casings or bombs that are found.
There used to be fill
Infill. Because there have been some training sites here in past years, and every now and then someone will dig something up. Now, the two devices found here not too long ago, we're pretty sure that one of them was unarmed, was not dangerous. But the other one we weren't completely sure of. We were able to detonate it safely. We blew it up. So we're not sure if it was actually had anything in it. We also have a device, a PAN device, where we can actually shoot a projectile into an object and blow it apart, separating the propellant and the explosive, so that it won't cause a large explosion.
Needless to say, neither of them survived to be seen on Pawn Stars.
Right.
That's kind of what I sense there.
Yeah.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 3:44. We'll be back with more from Mike Downey.
Sacred Heart Church invites you to join us every Sunday for our liturgical celebrations. Saturday, 4 p.m. Confessions. 5 p.m. Sunday's Vigil Mass. 7 p.m. Spanish Mass. And on Sundays, 9:30 Morning Mass and 12:30 Spanish Mass. Come and celebrate with us.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 3:47. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Mike Downey. So you got a new toy, huh?
We're sharing.
Or there is a new toy in the neighborhood.
We're sharing in a new toy. Yeah, this MRAP vehicle. I noticed that when it first hit the blogs, it pretty much exploded with the negative comments about the militarization of the area and so forth and so on.
Aren't you like a paramilitary organization?
Well, yeah, we are. Yeah.
But so somebody finally figured it out that there was a military connection?
Well, yeah. I wouldn't say it was quite that innocent, but it does, if you look at the vehicle, it does conjure up thoughts of, storming across the Iraq desert, I guess. But really, the way that came about and the purchase, well, not purchase, but it was actually a vehicle that we're able to, EPD was able, Eureka Police Department was able to procure, is that we look at it as a tool, more of a life-saving tool than anything else. If we have someone downrange, if we have an incident where someone's being shot at or an officer's down that's been hit and we have to go into harm's way, this is the perfect vehicle to go out, shield people so they can retrieve someone who's been injured. And also it's a perfect vehicle that if we have an armed incident and we want to keep our officers out of harm's way as best we can or other people, this is a perfect vehicle for that. This is what it's designed for. It's designed to take heavy impacts.
So like a hostage rescue kind of a situation?
Correct. Yeah. I look at more of a life-saving tool than anything else. And that's truly what it'll be used for is just those types of things, extrications, insertions.
That's what I was thinking with the earthquakes. Sometimes, if there was a building collapse, for example.
Yeah.
You need something with a little bit of moxie to be able to take care of the business.
Right. So it is a plus for us. There's Bearcats and those types of armored vehicles all over the United States. Departments have been using for years. I think this one just kind of conjured up a different view in some people's minds, but it's actually a very useful, good tool that will serve all the people in Humboldt County.
Painted yellow or something like that.
School bus yellow, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Well,
maybe not. Okay, yeah. It'll probably do something else.
Eureka is going to deal with the storage and regular service of the vehicle, but it'll be open to especially the SWAT team and their department for our use.
Cool stuff. Yeah. Thanks for coming by.
Thank you.
Go get those plantations, huh? Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Jeez Louise. Join us tomorrow afternoon, for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out, make it a good day. Hug somebody else.